Hello and welcome to the Decorum Talking Newspaper for the week ending Saturday the 16th of August. This is Rod and your other readers are Josephine, Kevin and Jane. The editor this week is Mark. We are all members of Team 2. We are sponsored by Knox Cropper LLP and their message is we provide expertise across the full range of accountancy services including taxation, VAT, audit, assurance and governance and compliance. Based in Apsley, telephone number is 01442218309 and at knoxcropper.com. Most of our news items are taken from the Hemel Hempstead, Berk, Hampstead and Tring Gazette and Express newspaper. All telephone numbers are on the local code of 01442 unless stated otherwise. This week's headlines: fresh bid to create new garden village. Doubling in holiday fines and centres get £23 million revamp. These and other stories follow. Here is the news.
Hello, this is Josephine. Developers have launched another bid to create a new village in the Tring area, consisting of 1,400 homes. Called Marshcroft, the area would also include a new primary school, with the potential for a secondary school, as well as plus a sports hub, and substantial open green spaces. It has been revealed that the current plans would include 700 homes that meet the government's affordable criteria. Harrow Estates is the company behind the bid, and Decorum Borough Council included the major project in its wider housing strategy, which runs until 2041. The project is linked to a wider plan to construct around 2,050 new homes, a 40% increase in the size of Tring in the area. These plans have drawn strong criticism from some locals who told the Daily Mail it would destroy the character of the market town and lead to gridlocked traffic. Harrow Estate says its plans include a range of dwellings suitable for people at many stages of life, and its homes would appeal to individuals, couples, growing families, downsizers and elder people. If successful, the properties would be available to purchase privately, to rent and under shared partnership. Harrow Estates wants to create a hub within its new village containing shops, offices, health facilities, a sports centre and other community areas. It is said by individuals involved in the project that it would represent a biodiversity net gain by keeping existing trees and hedgerow habitats, planting 2,800 new trees, and the creation of a new wildlife area. Other critics of the planned housing expansion questioned whether GP services and schools could cope with such a significant population rise. Tim Noden, planning director at Harrow Estates, said, "Marshcroft represents a significant opportunity to deliver on Decorum's long-established housing need, whilst providing much-needed affordable homes set around a range of community facilities and open green spaces. With plans now submitted to Decorum Council for determination, we've reached a milestone which puts us on track to deliver new homes by 2029 to 2030, in line with the Council's new local plan aspirations. We look forward to further discussions with the Council and consultees on this deliverable garden village." Plans can be found on the Decorum Borough Council planning portal, and a dedicated website can also be viewed via marshcroft-tring.co.uk.
Hello, this is Kevin. Fines totaling more than £240,000 were issued to Hertfordshire parents who took their children out of school for a term time holiday last year, more than doubling the amount demanded the previous year. With the prices of holidays and accommodation and flights soaring, as soon as schools break up, many parents are tempted by the lower costs of term time vacations, even if it means their children missing school. But following a change in national guidelines, more parents in Hertfordshire who take a break with their kids in term time are being issued with fixed penalty notices, and the amounts are increasing too. As part of the changes implemented in August 2024, such FPNs are now triggered when a child registers 10 unauthorised half-day school absences. Crucially, that means parents can no longer take children out of school for a week's holiday without the risk of a fine, which they could have done previously when the fines were triggered by 15 missed half days. In Hertfordshire, data requested by the local democracy reporting services show that the number of FPNs issued rose by 123% from 1,292 in 23-24 to 2,887 in 24-25, and the total value of those FPNs more than doubled, from £106,420 to £241,440. In future changes, the fine for a first offence is now £80 per parent per child, £20 higher than 23-24. And for those who breach attendance rules for a second time in any three-year period, that fine rises to £160 per parent per child. Following release of the data to the LDRS, a spokesman for Hertfordshire County Council, the local education authority, said, "We are sure that the parents of Hertfordshire want the best education for their children. By taking family holidays during the school holiday periods, the parents of Hertfordshire will be supporting their children's full school attendance, learning and development. The LDRS understands that payments from the FPNs are paid directly to the County Council. According to government guidance, all revenues collected through the system should be ring-fenced for attendance. They should first be used for administration of the penalty notice scheme and prosecution, and then for attendance support."
Hello, this is Jane. Council officials have launched a campaign to recruit foster carers, and they're appealing to every member of staff to help spread the word. Latest data shows that in recent months, the number of Hertfordshire County Council's in-house foster carers has decreased. Officials have launched their latest help campaign, appealing for residents to take on the role of caring for children who can't stay at home. That campaign is designed to reach out to businesses and other organisations with a video and advertising on buses and in supermarkets. But officials are also asking every one of the County Council's 8,000 staff and others to do their bit too. It was highlighted by Executive Member for Children's Social Care, Councillor Anthony Rowlands, in a report to the latest meeting of the County Council's Cabinet. "As this is a council-wide campaign, we are asking all the staff across Hertfordshire County Council to spend some time helping with our word of mouth campaign," he said. "This might involve visiting their local community centre, shop, cafe or church and handing out promotional materials which will be supplied by the recruitment team." Following the meeting, Councillor Rowlands stressed the importance of foster care in the county and the role volunteers could have in recruiting them. "The help campaign is looking to spread the word about the positive impact foster caring can have on the lives of children who can't live with their birth parents," he said. "Through art and social media, the campaign is amplifying the voices of children and young people in foster care, with the hope of inspiring more people in Hertfordshire to consider this rewarding role."
In Hertfordshire, around 1,000 children are in our care, but there are less than 400 fostering households. With a national decline in new foster carers, the council urgently needs more to come forward. For those considering fostering, Councillor Rowlands highlights the training, support and pay allowances offered by the councils, not-for-profit fostering service. And for those who aren't able to foster but who would like to become involved, he suggests they could leaflet in their neighbourhood or host talks by foster carers in community or faith groups. We need people to use their local networks to share information about the rewards of foster caring with people who might not traditionally consider it, he said. For more information about the campaign and to get involved, visit www.hertfordshire.gov.uk/fosterhelp. Latest data reveals that in the first 3 months of this year, 63.7% of Hertfordshire's looked after children were placed within the county. Ensuring children are placed close to home is a priority for the council and ensures the best outcomes for the youngsters. But following several months of improvements, the council has recorded a drop in the number of looked after children living in Hertfordshire. The report said that in 2024 to 2025, the number of in-house foster carers fell by 25.
Dacorum Borough Council has unveiled its plans to upgrade leisure centres in the region, with £23 million allocated to the project. Dacorum Borough Council has confirmed it is spending millions on renovations to Hemel Hempstead and Berkhamsted leisure centres. Included in the council's upgrade programmes are the following improvements: upgrades to Berkhamsted and Hemel Hempstead leisure centres, including new sports hall flooring, poolside improvements, and remodelling reception and cafe areas; retiling of 5 swimming pools at Hemel Hempstead leisure centre; vital maintenance works to ensure long-term sustainability, including replacement windows and new external cladding; introduction of energy-saving measures to reduce carbon emissions, such as new circulation pumps and LED lights across the sites; expansion of renewable energy initiatives, building on the recent installation of 762 solar panels at Hemel Hempstead Leisure Centre. Councillor Adrian England says, "I'm smiling and full of hope and purpose for our area to be starting this project to improve our leisure facilities. It is so good for our communities and for families that we enable and inspire the communities we serve to lead healthier, more active lives. This investment supports the Council's broader vision for Dacorum, aligning with our goals to improve public health and well-being, reduce environmental impact, and create characterful community spaces. Work on the sites is expected to begin in 2026, the council has revealed. Everyone active runs the day-to-day operations at the centres. Steve Cox, Everyone Active Area Contact Manager, said, "Everyone Active is delighted that Dacorum Borough Council is moving ahead with this significant investment into the borough's leisure centres."
Over 1,000 households in Hertfordshire with children under 14 are living in homes affected by damp and mould, according to a council report. Members of Hertfordshire Health and Wellbeing Board were presented with a report into health risks of damp and mould in the home. The report, prepared by Victoria Leitner, the council's strategic lead of public health, emphasised the impact on children and young people's health. It stated, "Good quality housing is a key determinant of health, helping prevent a range of health conditions, for instance, respiratory conditions, injuries and poor mental health. Poor housing quality is estimated to cost the NHS £1.4 billion per year to treat those who are affected, while leaving people with these conditions, it's estimated to cost society £18.5 billion per year. Poor quality old housing and high occupancy levels increase the risk of damp and mould. Moulds can cause health problems by producing allergens, irritants, and potentially toxic substances. Health issues include respiratory infections, allergies and asthma, with increased risk of children under 14, older adults 65 plus and immunocompromised individuals. In 2022, 14.6% of homes in England, 3.67 million, did not comply with the decent home standards, causing avoidable ill health and inequalities. In Hertfordshire, it is calculated that there are more than 17,855 damp homes with a minimum of 1,033 households with children under the age of 14. Shared strategic and collaborative priorities to address the needs for improved housing quality in Hertfordshire have been set out through a number of local policies and structures.
The Hertfordshire Health and Wellbeing Strategy articulates housing-related objectives within the Healthy Living Standards for All and Healthy and Sustainable Places and Communities themes. Additionally, housing quality and healthy places objectives are articulated within the Hertfordshire Public Health Strategy, the Integrated Care Strategy for Hertfordshire and West Essex, as well as the Hertfordshire Growth Board missions on right homes, right places, healthy and safer places and sustainable county to ensure good quality living standards. The report adds the development of an information flyer covering issues related to damp and mould, as well as a damp and mould risk scale and an e-booklet for professionals. It's been pivotal in helping to tackle problems locally. Further steps include enhanced training for GPs and other health, social care and voluntary service professionals, with a launch set for autumn. Efforts will also be made to improve referrals for essential repairs in homes across Hertfordshire.
Filming at County Hall generated almost £225,000 additional income for Hertfordshire County Council over a two-year period, members heard. The landmark building on Peggs Lane, Hertford, was once the thriving headquarters of the council and used for thousands of staff daily. But since 2023, the vast majority have moved to the authority's Stevenage campus. And the flagship site, with its Grade 2 listed frontage and 1970s offices, has been used in TV and film productions. According to a report prepared to the latest meeting of the council's cabinet in 2023 and 2024, the County Hall site was used as a filming location for seven productions which have appeared on various platforms, including Netflix, Apple TV and ITV. The report says the council constantly previews income opportunities across its assets and is keen to support the economic growth of the film industry in Hertfordshire. The council generated more than £224,000 across 2023 and 2024 from successful filming applications. Filming has continued this year. Over the past 2 years, much of the site has been marketed for employment use, with the council's former Conservative administration having committed to keeping the Grade 2 listed section of the building for democratic purposes. But the same meeting of the cabinet, now controlled by the local Liberal Democrats after May's local elections, councillors said that the entire site should now be marketed for alternative uses. Retaining the front section of County Hall, which includes the council chambers, would require £9.7 million of capital, with investment and incurring costs of £2.3 million a year. A spokesperson for the County Council said, "We will continue to look at how we can generate income to help deliver the services to our residents and businesses. I hope we can build on the income generated in previous years and welcome more film and television productions to our wonderful county.
A man who worked as a locum doctor for West Hertfordshire NHS Trust has been allowed to resume practising after he repaid £31,500 in overpayments for work carried out in 2016 and 2017. Mahendra Nathadwarawala was working in a consultant role in an accident and emergency department at the time of the incident, which he did not initially declare. He was a director and shareholder of Devum Group Limited, DGL, which was mistakenly overpaid £31,500 for his agency locum work by DRC Locums Limited. In 2023, a medical tribunal found that the money had not been repaid, with no payments made between March 2018 and February 2023. But in a new tribunal held on July 24th, evidence was provided that Mr. Nathadwarawala has now repaid the overpayments in full and his suspension has been revoked with immediate effect. The 2023 tribunal had imposed a six-month suspension, but it did not come into effect until February this year, after Mr. Nathadwarawala submitted an appeal, which was rejected by the High Court. Speaking to last month's tribunal, Mr. Nathadwarawala expressed his sincere remorse for his previous actions and said he apologised deeply to the General Medical Council and to the public. He accepted full responsibility for failing to promptly address the overpayments he had received, the tribunal's report said.
Mr. Nathadwarawala, who qualified in 1984 at the University of Baroda in India, confirmed that he has now repaid the overpayment in full and added that he felt sorry, ashamed and disappointed in himself for his previous actions. The overpayments were paid by DRC Locums Limited to Devium Group Limited, a company in which he was a director and shareholder. He did not initially bring the overpayment to the attention of DRC or arrange for repayments to be made, and the 2023 tribunal concluded he had acted in a dishonest way. The payments derived from NHS funds, the tribunal heard. Last month's tribunal noted that he no longer worked as a self-employed individual, having dissolved his company, and is now paid directly to his personal bank account. The tribunal concluded that he had complied with the recommendations of the 2023 tribunal and reflected on why honesty is fundamental to medical practice. It rejected arguments from the GMC that his fitness to practice remains impaired. They had argued that his evidence lacks substance with an absence of detail as to what concrete steps he had taken to prevent repetition of the incident. He was working as a consultant role at an accident and emergency department at the time of the incident in 2017 and had a long and otherwise unblemished career, the tribunal noted.
Education officials have missed their milestone target to increase the number of education, health and care plans, EHCPs, completed within statutory timeframes. Officials had hoped that by April of this year, 2025, at least 60% of EHCPs would be completed within 20 weeks. But the latest data published by Hertfordshire County Council shows that in the 12 months ending in April, the authority had not met the milestone. Throughout 2024, January to December, council officials say 56.3% of EHCPs were issued within 20 weeks, just 3.7% shy of the 60% milestone. And that annual figure, they say, is 16% higher than the 40.2% rate recorded in Hertfordshire in 2023. Achieved whilst increasing the overall number of completed EHCPs by 27%, They say it's almost 24% higher than 32.6% completed on time in the county in 2022. It is also higher than the national average of 46.4%. Despite failing to hit the milestone of 60%, they say Hertfordshire now ranks as one of the better performing areas in the country for HCP completion. We did aim to hit 60% by the end of 2024, and despite the significant improvement in our performance since the Ofsted local area inspection in 2023, we have missed that milestone by a few percent, said a spokesperson for the County Council. This is mainly due to a 27% rise in the number of requests for assessments last year compared to 2023, which is a larger increase than we had expected. As of this month, July 2025, over 14,400 children and young people in Hertfordshire are supported with an EHCP, up 10% from this time last year, and a 223% increase between 2015 and 2025. We know that we've been challenged to keep up with that increase, and that's why SEND improvement is a key priority for both the County Council and local NHS. In the first 3 months of this year, between January and March, the rate of EHCPs completed within statutory timeframes dropped to 31%. That is 7% lower than the 38% recorded in November 2023, when an inspection report by Ofsted and the CQC had highlighted the significant delays in the process. Accounting for the fall in the rate of EHCPs completed within the statutory timescale, officials say that in this three-month period there had been a focus on reducing the number of overdue assessments. And although 650 EHCPs were completed, more than in any other three-month period of 24-25, the knock-on effect meant a greater proportion were not within the timescale.
A spokesperson for the County Council said, "We still have a backlog of outstanding EHCPs that we are working hard to clear, and due to the way the quarterly statistics are calculated, our success in this area has led to a drop in recorded performance, even though we have issued more EHCPs on time than in the previous quarter." According to the report presented to the Cabinet, as completion of assessments returns to a more typical timescale, the proportion issued within statutory timeframes is expected to improve. The additional investment proposed in 2025-2026 will support the continued work to improve timeliness further to meet both the milestones of 60% identified in the Priority Action Plan and beyond, says the report. This is absolutely not a ceiling. It represents an improvement milestone as set out in the Priority Action Plan issued and agreed in January 2024 and based on the services starting baseline. Our ambition is to support all children in a timely way and to be among the best performers in the country. And we are committed to achieving this in the context of a national challenge for SEND. EHCPs are legal documents that outline the additional support a child or young person needs to meet their special educational, health and care needs.
Dacorum Borough Council has announced that the major chalk stream restoration project taking place on the River Gade is nearly finished. Previously, the Council announced its efforts to reconnect the natural floodplain at Gadebridge Park as a landmark achievement for Dacorum's environment. The stream from the River Gadebridge Park in Hemel Hempstead has been rerouted back to its natural course through the centre of the park. Dacorum Borough Council says the final phase of the project, which has begun, is focused on shifting to habitat establishment access improvements and land restoration. Among the features currently being worked on are a new riverside footpath and two pedestrian bridges. New planting and wildflower areas are also being created to support wildlife recovery in this rare chalk stream environment. The authority has also revealed that its councillors and officers regularly visited the site to review the progress of the river gate being moved to a more natural configuration. Councillor Robin Brumham said, "We are grateful to the Environment Agency for this investment in the river gate. This is one of only about 200 chalk streams in the world, 85% of which are in southern and eastern England. With their constant flow, mineral-rich clear water and gravelly bed, they provide habitats for species found in few other places. By returning the river to its natural floodplain and reconnecting to the aquifer, we are restoring nature, while giving the opportunity to enjoy and learn about this environment. The removal of weirs helps achieve ecological connection of chalk streams to the sea, hopefully enabling migratory species such as eels and trout to thrive again. While construction teams have left the site, Decorum Borough Council has confirmed that parts of the area will remain fenced off over the summer. The council says that this is so freshly seeded grass and new planting can establish fully. Decorum Borough Council says it will be overseeing the installation of railings on the new central footbridge and the delivery of an accessible footpath. It has opened a temporary chalk stream trail for children.
Most calls to Hertfordshire County Council are being answered in less than a minute, according to newly published data. The authority's latest performance report shows that in the first 3 months of this year, 89,700 calls were made to the customer service centre. 94% of them were answered. Callers waited on average 53 seconds to be answered. The monthly averages were 48 seconds in January, 52 in February and 57 in March, with 75%, 72% and 71% respectively answered within a minute. That's better than the council's target of answering 70% of calls within a minute, and says the report is in line with both councils and better than many. The 53-second average wait is 10 seconds quicker than the 63 seconds recorded over the previous quarter, and significantly quicker than the April to June last year, when callers had to wait more than 3 minutes on average. The County Council put these delays down to considerable teething issues with a new telephony and customer relationship management system. A spokesman for the council said, "Call times in the first quarter of 2024 were not answered as quickly as we would have hoped as new software was implemented, but we're really pleased that these initial teething problems were resolved quickly, and since then we've answered calls to us in under 60 seconds.
Police officers are searching for a wanted man who is linked to an alleged serious assault and robbery offence. Hertfordshire Constabulary has launched a social media appeal asking for the public's help locating Robert Ward. He is 42 years old and has no fixed abode. He's wanted after failing to appear in court in relation to a serious assault and robbery offence. Hertfordshire Constabulary has revealed that Ward is believed to be in the Haystow and Wigginton areas near Tring. A spokesperson for the police force said, "Anyone who sees Ward or has any information about his whereabouts is asked to report information online at hearts.police.uk/report. Speak to an operator in our force communications room via our online web chat at hearts.police.uk/contact or call the non-emergency number 101. Alternatively, you can stay 100% anonymous contacting Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111 or via their untraceable online form at crimestoppers-uk.org.
Hemel-based charity PlaySkill is proud to announce the appointment of its first ever patron, Lord Lieutenant of Hertfordshire Robert Voss, CBE, CSTJ. This landmark appointment reflects the Lord Lieutenant's long-standing support for PlaySkill, which provides free specialist therapies and support to preschool children with physical disabilities and their families. As the monarch's personal representative in the county, Robert brings prestige and visibility to the charity's mission, helping PlaySkill reach more families in need of early intervention services. PlaySkill's unique one-stop shop helps to develop key life skills of children with physical disabilities, using play as a tool for development. While the children are having fun, they are also learning to crawl, stand, eat, communicate and walk. The charity's free term time specialist playgroups provide expert therapies, physiotherapy, occupational and speech and language therapy, tailored to the child's needs, alongside essential support and training for parents, an all-important network of fellow parents and respite events for the whole family all year round. The only charity of its kind in Hertfordshire and one of only a few in the country, PlaySkill steps in during the crucial early intervention window, age 0 to 5, when the brain is developing faster than any other time. Ever since I first visited PlaySkill about 7 years ago, I have been incredibly impressed with the way the charity supports very young children with disabilities, helping them to develop in many different ways. The care and love shown, not only to the children, but the whole family is, as a whole, is heartwarming. From singing the Wheels on the Bus to visiting Santa's Grotto, I've enjoyed each visit. To now become patron of this wonderful charity gives me enormous pleasure. I hope to be able to help PlaySkill develop and grow to continue helping even more children and their families in and around Hertfordshire, said Robert Voss, CBE, CSTJ. Appointing our first patron is a major milestone for PlaySkill, says Nikki Michael, CEO of PlaySkill. Robert has been a passionate advocate for our work and we're thrilled to formalise this relationship. His support will be invaluable as we continue to expand our reach and impact. If you or someone you know could be eligible for PlaySkill support or you are interested in supporting the cause, visit www.playskill.org for more information.
A police officer in Hertfordshire has been handed a community order after he admitted beating and sexually assaulting the same victim. At Luton Magistrates Court on August 6th, it was confirmed that Chris Rann, 47, from Hitchin, would not be sent to jail for committing the attacks. He pleaded guilty to 2 counts of assault by beating and 1 count of sexual assault at the same court on July 3rd. Luton Magistrates Court heard that both attacks were committed on the same victim in December 2024. Hertfordshire Constabulary has described his punishment as a 12-month high-level community order. He was also ordered to complete 200 hours of unpaid work, a 15-day rehabilitation requirement, and will be on the Sex Offenders Register for 5 years. He was further subjected to pay £500 in compensation, £85 in costs, and a 12-month restraining order against the victim. The police force also confirmed that Rann had been suspended from duty pending the conclusion of an internal investigation and had recently resigned from his post. A conduct hearing will be held in due course, Hertfordshire Constabulary added. Deputy Chief Constable Andy Mariner said, Rand's conduct fell well below the standards we expect in Hertfordshire. Officers and staff who fall below our policing standards, and in this case commit criminal offences, damage the public's confidence in what we do, which in turn makes our job of catching criminals and protecting victims harder.
Local Lions Club Hemel Hempstead are involved in the project to restore Frogmore Paper Mill after the arson attack in 2022. This is one of many local projects that they're involved in. Others include carpets and beds for local disadvantaged families and the purchase of a 10-seat canoe, which has been named Simba for a local scouts group. More about the Hemel Hempstead Lions Club. For 64 years, the Hemel Hempstead Lions Club has supported local people and are seeking service-minded men and women to join them in making a difference in the community. Please visit the Hemel Hempstead Lions Club Facebook page for more information. We can also be found on Tuesday afternoon and Thursday morning serving the community in the Lions Bookshop in the Marlow Shopping Centre in Hemel Hempstead.
Now we come to the information slot. This is followed by the obituaries, what's on, further news and sport.
This week in history, August the 16th, 1962, Pete Best, original drummer with the Beatles, was fired by Brian Epstein and replaced by Ringo Starr. August the 17th, 1987, former senior Nazi Rudolf Hess committed suicide in Spandau Prison at the age of 93. On this day last year, Paris Hilton said she was incredibly grateful for supporters after a fire on the set of her Bad Bitch Academy music video. Hilton posted a picture of her burned out trailer and her Instagram story showing the completely gutted. August the 18th, 1971, 28-year-old disabled man Eamon McDivitt was shot dead by the army in Strabane, Northern Ireland. August the 19th, 1953, England under Captain Len Hutton won the Ashes for the first time since the controversial Bodyline Tour of 1932-33. August the 20th, 1956, Calder Hall in Cumbria, the world's first large-scale atomic power station, began generating. On this day last year, Lindsay Lohan said her heart was so full as filming on the upcoming Freaky Friday sequel drew to a close. The American actress, 38, was returning to her role as Anna, while Jamie Lee Curtis was reprising her part as her mother, Tess, for the follow-up titled Freaky Friday.
Perfect place to call home. With their charm, convenience and community spirit, Market Towns will set first-time buyers back £280,582 on average. Here are the top three least expensive Market Towns. Number one, Leek in West Midlands, £191,359. Number two, Chesterfield, East Midlands, £198,054. Number three, Northallerton, Yorkshire and the Humber, £201,628. And here are the top three most expensive Market Towns. Number one, Hitchin in East England, £410,366. Number two, Altrincham in the Northwest, £404,864. And number three, West Malling in the Southeast, £396,925.
The obituaries on the family announcement page this week are Doreen Marjorie Embury, passed away peacefully at home on Friday the 1st of August, aged 88, sadly missed by her family and friends. Patricia Winifred Pat Hall passed away after a short illness at home on Thursday the 17th of July, aged 85. Michael John Kennedy passed away on the 25th of July, aged 87. And Betty Mavis Snow passed away on the 1st of August, aged 91 years. She will be greatly missed by close family and her many friends. Betty will be remembered by many for her role with the Brownies and guides in the Tring area. May they all rest in peace.
Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care is delighted to announce the return of its popular Chiltern Three Peaks Challenge. The annual walking event will take place on Sunday, September the 14th, and offers a chance to enjoy the breathtaking scenery of the rolling Chiltern Hills while raising money to support local hospice care. The walk, which starts at Princess Risborough School, offers three different routes: 7, 10.5 or 18.5 miles long, that all take in that part of the Ridgeway, with the longer routes ending at Ivanhoe Beacon. Suitable for everybody from first-timers to experienced walkers, the route can be tackled by families, friends or groups of colleagues and even four-legged friends. Walkers are encouraged to raise a minimum of £250 each in sponsorship, as this would be enough to pay for a day of counselling sessions for individuals or groups, providing crucial support for patients and carers throughout their journey and during bereavement. Darren from Hertfordshire has accessed both individual and group bereavement support from Rennie Grove Peace since his wife Laura died in 2023. He said, "My first one-to-one counselling session wasn't easy, but I was fine after that. The group sessions have also been a revelation. I enjoy going to speak with people who have gone through something similar to me. They may have lost their husband, wife, child, grandparent, and they're from all walks of life, but we all have something in common. Sometimes we're laughing, sometimes we're crying, sometimes we're just talking about our families." All Chiltern's Three Peaks participants will receive an event T-shirt and a medal to celebrate their amazing achievement, and walkers who raise £535 or more will receive a free Rennie Grove Peace hoodie.
Emma Stewart, events manager at Rennie Grove Peace Hospice Care, says the Chiltern's Three Peaks Challenge has become a real staple of the local fundraising calendar since it started 16 years ago. Many people who try it once come back in future years and tell us it's because they enjoyed the route, the atmosphere on the day, and the opportunity to do something to support people in their community. So why not gather a group, sign up and join the amazing effort to raise vital funds for the local hospice care? The event wouldn't be the success it is without the support of our amazing sponsors. I'd like to thank our long-term sponsors, Origin Doors and Windows, for being the headline sponsor of this year's event, as well as Arriva, R. Benson, TFI Fire and Electrical Systems, and Wendover Wood for their support. Tickets are available now and cost £16 for adults over 16 and £10 for children 5 to 15, with children under 5 walking for free. A group ticket is available, priced at £50 for 2 adults and 2 children. Visit renniegrovepeace.org/C3P to sign up today.
The Hospice of St Francis will hold its popular annual garden party in the stunning grounds of Ashridge House on Saturday, 14th of September, with this year's event offering a wide range of activities and attractions to keep the whole family entertained. Partygoers can look forward to regular attractions like cream teas, live music, dog show, Pim's tent, and a wide range of speciality locally produced food and drink. There will also be a shop local village with a variety of artisan gifts to browse. The family-friendly event draws crowds in the thousands who come to soak up the festival atmosphere and enjoy the opportunity to explore the extensive grounds of Ashridge House, which has played host for 21 years to what is now the best attended event in the charity's fundraising calendar. Nearly 5,000 people made the most of the warm sunshine last year, raising over £43,000 for the Berkhamsted-based charity. The garden party is a chance to show support for the hospice and to help to raise over £6 million needed every year to fund its free care and support for people facing life-limiting illnesses in West Harts and South Bucks. Live music from Choir on the Green, the James Trio and a ukulele band will entertain the crowds throughout the afternoon. Children can look forward to circus skills, face painting and craft activities like sand art. Advance tickets priced £8 for adults and £4 for children over three are available online. Children under three are free. Please visit stfrancis.org.uk/gardenparty.
And some more local events. St Albans Antique and Vintage Market. This Sunday, the 17th of August, it's got a whole lot more interesting in St Albans City Centre. An outdoor street market right in the heart of the amazing cathedral city, bringing all manner of antiques, vintage, brocante and architectural salvage. An amazing atmosphere and inspirational dealers. As we're based outdoors, we're always at the mercy of the weather. Please always check here to be sure the market is going ahead if the weather looks iffy. It's at St Peter Street in St Albans between 9 and 3pm on Sunday, and you can find more details on our website www.stalbansantiqueandvintagemarket.com. Art in the Nave Arts Festival, open daily 11am to 5pm. The festival transforms the historic 12th century church into a vibrant gallery space. Visitors will enjoy the chance to explore and purchase original works from local artists, including paintings, textiles, ceramics, glass, handmade jewellery and silverware. It's Saturday the 23rd to Monday the 25th of August at St Mary's Church in the Old Town in Hemel Hempstead. Find out more information by www.facebook.com/artinthenave. Tring Farmers Market, started in May 1999 to promote local food for local people. Since then, it established a reputation as a really friendly shopping experience, and its refreshment stall offers you the facility to sit and enjoy a mug of coffee or tea and a delicious hot bacon roll with your friends. All food is either made or grown locally, and the people serving you are usually the producers and are willing to answer any questions regarding the products. So if you want good quality, locally produced products at a reasonable cost, where else can you go but Tring Farmers Market, the marketplace in Brook Street, Tring. The next event is on the 23rd of August from 9am to 12.30.
The Ayoub sisters, these are Scottish Egyptian instrumentalists and composers. The Ayoub sisters rose to stardom after their debut album premiered at number one in the official classical charts. The sisters are recognised internationally for their chemistry on stage, as well as their ability to unite different musical genres and cultures together with their unique compositional style. This is on the 14th of September, 8pm at the Old Town Hall, Hemel Hempstead. Telephone 228091 or visit oldtownhall.co.uk/events/the-Ayoub, spelt A-Y-O-U-B-sisters. The Nat King Cole Story, featuring a world-class group of musicians, including a jazz rhythm section alongside strings. This intimate and thoughtful production combines live music, imagery and narration to celebrate one of the greatest and most iconic entertainers of the 20th century. The concert features a sparkling collection of Nat's best love hits, including Nature Boy, Smile, Mona Lisa, Route 66, L-O-V-E, and, of course, Unforgettable, all of which are set against a backdrop of rare archival images and footage, which vividly brings to life the music of the great man. Wheelchair and companion tickets are available, showing at Watford Palace Theatre on Friday the 5th of September at 7:30. Sales at watfordpalacetheatre.co.uk.
Lucy Bailey is directing her fifth Agatha Christie stage adaptation, and she feels it couldn't be more timely. There's something very reassuring about the fact that the person who's committed the crime is going to be found out and the world will make sense in the end, says Lucy, who is helming a UK and Ireland tour of Death on the Nile. And I think this form of entertainment is particularly sought after now, where everything is in chaos around us, and we don't feel that there are many answers. Lucy believes people are somewhat rudderless at the moment, adding there's a sense of despair in our culture and in our hearts at what's going on in the world. When you go to the theatre, though, you're plunged into something where there's going to be a solution and a resolution. I think that's why audiences are some drawn to thrillers, mysteries and whodunits now more than ever. Bailey's previous Christie credits include Witness for the Prosecution, Love from a Stranger, And Then There Were None, and Murder on the Orient Express. She's excited about doing a sequel to the latter with Death on the Nile, also featuring Belgian sleuth Hercule Poirot. It's one of the biggest titles in the Christie canon, along with Murder on the Orient Express, of course. And I liked the idea of going from one Poirot to the next. The director says of Whodunit that sees Poirot solving a murder on a boat in Egypt rather than on a train in Yugoslavia. The gripping story is set in the late 30s on board a luxurious cruising vessel under the heat of the Egyptian sun, when a couple's idyllic honeymoon is cut short by a brutal murder. As secrets that have been buried in the sands of time finally resurface and a love triangle is revealed, can the world-famous detective untangle the web of lies at the heart of the crime? Christie's novel was published in 1937 to strong sales and glowing reviews. Lucy hadn't read it before she signed up. She signed up to direct Ken Ludwig's stage adaptation, but she recalls seeing the 1974 film version starring Peter Ustinov as the Belgian detective when she was young. It remained very potent and exotic in my imagination, as it has for other people. It's one of those massive resonant titles that just stay with you. Lucy also says the 2004 TV version starring David Suchet then read the book as preparation for directing the stage play, and it turned out to be one of Christie's best novels, she writes, in such incredible detail. And she brings a huge company of people onto this boat, all of whom are completely fascinating. Then she puts them all together and slowly ratchets up the tension. She previously worked with Ludwig on his adaptation of Murder on the Orient Express and is thrilled to be collaborating with him again, saying, "Ken has an absolute knack of making people laugh and feel hugely entertained, and he's done that in a fantastic way again with Death on the Nile."
Careful to avoid spoilers, she adds, he has his own take on it, where he's playing out several scenarios of people falling in love on this boat. At the centre of it is this really disturbing, almost perverted love triangle, but he's surrounded that with happier characters. He's achieved both the light and shade in this piece. You have to have the darkness, otherwise it's not an Agatha Christie, but Ken ensures that it's also great fun. He's also confined all of the action to the boat setting. With Murder on the Orient Express, you're trapped on a train, and with this version of Death on the Nile, you're trapped on a boat, which adds to the intense claustrophobia. Given that the story is set in the 1930s, is it relevant today, or is it just fantastic escapism? I think it's a bit of both. With the people on board, we sort of know them because we're surrounded by similar people full of self-obsession and ambition. I also think everyone knows or has experienced unrequited, jilted, desperate love. You have to have empathy with the characters, even if they're doing something extremely wrong. The American writer agrees with Lucy that of the 66 books Christie wrote, Death on the Nile is right up there when it comes to name recognition. Then, when you read it, it has such an amazing story at its centre, he says. It's fiendishly clever. There's a love triangle, and the way the tensions within that ultimately explode is shocking. It's also a story that the writer believes is very relevant today. It's completely timeless because the plot doesn't hinge on the era in which it is set or what was happening in the world at the time. This is a personal story that could happen any time. Ludwig is a big fan of Poirot as a fussy little Belgian who brings lightness to Christie's dark stories and is fascinating because of his crime-solving skills. Those little grey cells of his are always working, especially in Death on the Nile. The story keeps turning on its head, and it does so with so much muscle. It's very raw and tough and tight, so the audience is just mesmerised. Death on the Nile runs at Milton Keynes Theatre from October 14th to October 18th. Visit atgtickets.com/Milton Keynes to book.
Okay, we now have a roundup of the weekend's cricket at Hemel Hempstead Town Cricket Club. The first 11 versus Chorley Wood. It was a fourth win on the trot for Hemel as they moved up to fourth in the championship. Hemel were a bit disappointed to only make 208 for 9, as the pitch was good, the outfield lightning fast, and the bowling not too threatening. They enjoyed a good start from Brett Penny, 42, and Hem Ilaganti, 46, but then Angus Ball, 30, was the next highest scorer. Even worse, opening bowler Darren James managed to turn his ankle in the dressing room and couldn't bowl. The rest came to the fore, though. Ollie Elliott took 3 for 52, Imran Admarzi 2 for 38, Mark Brazier 2 for 29, and Ed Pike 2 for 15. In the second 11 game against Sweet Hampstead, it was a third win on the trot for Hemel seconds as they did the double over Sweet Hampstead, who are second in the division against Hemel's fifth place. But only just, Sweet Hampstead made it 202 for 7 from their 50 overs, with spinners Jacob Hodgkins 2 for 31 and Stan Hayden 2 for 40 heading the wicket taking. Latiro Corrigan 10 and Ed Langley 69 set Hemel off well, but only brother Will Langley 19 was able to make it to double figures, other than Brad Finch, who made 58 and together with number 11 Stan Hayden 9 put on 27 for the 10th wicket to see Hemel over the line at 203 for 9 from 49.5 overs and with one ball to go. And the third 11 played Langlebury second 11, a thumping of bottom side Langlebury, which saw Hemel thirds up into second place in the division and promotion place with four to play. Battling first, Langlebury were bowled out for 143 in 37 overs, with Max Petchell taking 3 for 16, Callum Humphreys 2 for 37, Eran Jayashing 2 for 43 and Carter Botha 2 for 23. Hemelhem tapped off 145 for 2 in 20.4 overs, with Cam Akhtar hitting 74 from 14 fours and 1 6 from just 44 balls.
And now football. Lee Allinson declared himself happy with the point, but not with his Hemel Hempstead Town side's performance as they opened the National League South season last weekend. The Tudors drew 1-1 with Maidstone United, but it took a 93rd minute equaliser for Miller Matthews Lewis to earn a share of the spoils. And speaking to the club's media after the game, Allinson intimated that while conditions were a factor, he wasn't pleased with how his side played. He said, "I thought we were poor. The wind was horrendous. Maidstone have gone with the wind in the first half and it was actually stronger than I thought it was. There wasn't much football played. It was messy, it was ugly, and I thought the goal we gave away was absolutely criminal. I've watched Adi Aziz get absolutely manhandled all over the park and the kids worked his absolute socks off, yet we watched their centre forward just run through us, no manhandling, no stopping or people wanting to get to the ball, and unfortunately they score from it. But last season we struggled to be able to turn the game from the bench, but this year we've had the chairman's backing and this time the subs have changed the game. They gave us legs and energy and a bit of bravery on the ball and we equalised. But it wasn't deserved, in my opinion, and Michael Johnson has kept us in the game with a brilliant performance. But when you're chasing, they're always going to get chances like that. I'm just so disappointed with the first half, but I have to take into account that Maidstone are full-time and were so well-drilled, defended their box brilliantly, and we just couldn't get a foothold in the game. But overall, I'm really happy with the point. Hemel are on the road for their next two games, and both are in Berkshire, as Slough Town play host on Saturday before the Tudors then go to Maidenhead United next Tuesday night.
We would like to make an apologies that with last week's reading, due to unforeseen circumstances, there were only two readers on Team One. We hope everybody enjoyed the reading despite this. Thank you. We're coming to the end of this week's news. Sunrise and sunset times for this weekend are 05:48 and 20:23. For those with access to the internet, our news is uploaded to our website soon after the recording each week on Thursday evening. This can be found by visiting dtnhemel.org.uk. If you wish to listen on Alexa, say, "Alexa, open the talking newspaper skill." Alexa will ask you which broadcast you want to listen to. Then promptly reply, "Play the Decorum Talking Newspaper." This part can be tricky if Alexa offers the wrong station. Just say no and then try again. For those who are listening to this week's news via a memory stick, after the music there is the amenities section that gives details of various groups and the contact details of organisations. Please remove your memory stick carefully from the player and return it to us in the pouch provided. Seal it up firmly, turn the label over and post it back to us using any Royal Mail postbox. No stamp is required. Thank you for listening. Until next time, it's goodbye from all your readers, the editor and Mike, our technician for this week. Thank you.